Welcome to User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to this week's show. And if you missed this last week, again, happy 2026. May this be a wonderful year for everybody. It'll be interesting for us. We've got some exciting new things coming this year for User Friendly. You're just going to have to wait and see what they are. But we'll talk about them as the year goes by. Bill, Gretchen, welcome.
Hello there.
Hello.
So since last week's show was obviously recorded before the first, just because we were off that week, I'm going to ask you, since we're going live now, how was your New Year's?
Very quiet.
Went pretty well.
Quiet? And it was quiet for me, too.
Well, so, except for the noisy people outside.
Well, that's because you live in the middle of a war zone.
But yeah. It seems like it looks normal during the daytime, you know, but then all the people come home and they're really noisy.
Well, if the time comes that we can fly the jet suits, we'll be able to take off and land in your neighborhood because nobody will, you know, think anything
notice.
Of it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, well, on into 2026, we're going to be covering two things this week. After the news, we're going to be talking about what's going on with CES. Now, as we record, CES is actively going on. It's Wednesday. When you hear this, it will have concluded. So there might be some additional news. And if there is anything major that comes after today, we'll pick that up next week for you. But there's been some exciting things announced and some generally just unusual, some unexpected, some that are expected. And spoiler alert, AI isn't everything. We'll talk about that after the news. Second segment, we're going to be talking about Arcade 1UP. James Sherwood, host of The Vault, is going to be joining me on that. And for anybody that doesn't know, Arcade 1UP is a company that manufactures replica stand-up arcade machines of a lot of the classics and different things. They're three-quarter size. They're meant for the house. I have one for Golden Axe and another one for TMNT. I like them. You would never put them in an arcade or anything because they wouldn't stand up to it. But for your game room, it was an inexpensive way to get something that I think was really cool. Well, unfortunately, the company is, I want to say, ceasing operations, although at this point, the website is still up and you can still order. But we're going to be talking about the details of what's going on with that in the next segment and what's going to happen if you have a cabinet that requires online connectivity, like their Infinity Table or a number of other things, and what's going to happen if the servers get shut down, and even if that's going to happen. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's go ahead and jump into our news first of 2026.
All right. There is an update to Kennedy leaving Lucasfilm, sort of.
So we're covering this because this has been a lot of questions from you on what's going on here. And for anybody that doesn't know, Kathleen Kennedy is the president or CEO, one of those titles, of Lucasfilm at Disney. She's been running it for a number of years, and she's had bright spots and not so bright spots. Acolyte anyway, but yeah.
Sorry.
And she had stated earlier last year that she was going to be stepping down at the end of 2025. Now, as we are in 2026, she still has not stepped down, but according to reports that are out there, so this is a little bit of a rumor thing, but they are coming up with an exit plan, which would seem to substantiate that this is going to happen. She's now expected to step down as president. Okay, that was her title, of Lucasfilm, in the next couple of weeks. And they're talking about having Dave Filoni take over and Lynwen Brennan also taking a lead role as either co-presidents or something of that nature. And again, we don't know what officially is going up yet. There hasn't been no official press release or anything like that at this point, but it does look like this is around the corner. So we'll keep
you mean there aren't any security people, you know, wearing suits and glasses and carrying an empty box for her?
Not yet. That would make an interesting video. Would it come up to the president's desk? Okay, fill your box and we're out.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't think they do that. Maybe Wells Fargo. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, no. They just lock the door and just tell you you can't come in and ever again.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what a way to. Anyway, so that's a whole other topic for a whole other time. But this is the information we have on this right now. And there's a number of different outlets that are reporting different things, but that seems to be what's going on. That is being agreed upon. Her contract expired at the end of 2025, according to the sources that have the rest of this. So what's going on right now is probably, hopefully, making a decision. She's run the company for a long time. Some love her, some don't. but it's definitely good to sometimes make a change in the personnel, maybe pick a little different direction.
Warner Brothers tells shareholders that Larry Ellison's wealth isn't enough to best a Netflix bid.
Okay, so that's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But basically what's going on here is Warner Brothers and Discovery, for anybody that doesn't know, got tied up a number of years ago. They were spun off by one of the cell phone communication carriers that for some reason bought that company and then didn't seem like they knew how to run it. So they spun it off and it became Warner Brothers Discovery. And the two are divorcing amicably, from what I understand, where Discovery Networks and Warner Brothers each come their own thing again. And Warner Brothers, that part of it was set up to be sold to Netflix. And Netflix had come in and offered a tidy sum, let's just say. I mean, you know, I say it's a cup of coffee at Starbucks. This would be like four or five.
and to that end, and the kind with the fluffy stuff on the top?
Yeah, you even have the barista, you know, make the design in the foam. We can have Weird Al talk about that one. But at the end of the day, the concern here is this will make a giant media empire, because Netflix would then own Warner Brothers catalog and studios and some other things. They were not originally taking the networks, so like Discovery Network and TNT and some of these others from the linear television days are still out there, but they're waning. Just to say it, you know, as everything goes to new media and streaming, that kind of broadcast is definitely something that has become obsolete. It still exists. And there are still people that subscribe to it. And if you're one of those people, please check how much you're paying, because there's a number of other ways you can get your what would have been cable for a lot less money. But at the end of the day, these type of things are on the back end and eventually will shut down, or they'll do something else with them. And along the lines with that, this again was a concern. So Paramount came in and tried to make a bid for a takeover, non-amicably, and came in with a lot more money. But there's a huge debt position that would be assumed. And that's something that knocks a lot of these companies out at the end of the day, is they merge and take on a whole bunch of debt, and then they can't pay the debt when something goes wrong. So at this point, they are saying that this is not going to be an option. They're going to stick with the Netflix bid and go forward. And if that happens, maybe things will stabilize, and they will. But we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see antitrust concern from the government on this either, just because of what it will end up creating is going to be a monster.
Are you sure it's going to be a monster?
Well, how about a powerhouse? That might be a better
word. A powerhouse. Okay. Because a monster implies, you know, trashing things and destroying stuff, you know, Godzilla type, you know.
That's true. You know, maybe, I don't know if they have the rights to the old video game Rampage, but maybe that
one. Oh, okay. NASA's Hubble spots a stellar wake inside Betelgeuse. And I'm pretty sure that's Betelgeuse. Like, you know.
Don't say it three times. We might have a problem.
Uh-oh.
All right. No, this is not the movie. It is a thing that exists in space. And companion star wake. Okay, so let's talk about what that is very quickly. Betelgeuse is a red giant. And it is something that we've known about, and with Hubble and James Webb and a lot of the new imaging technology we have, science has been learning a lot about it. And one of the things that was postulated is that there's a second star that orbits Betelgeuse, probably.
Oh.
And this was always a theory until now. They've proven the existence of this. And the way that they've done that is with the higher end imaging, they can actually see when the small star goes through the light created by the Betelgeuse star, it creates a different wavelength.
Ah.
So Betelgeuse is a red giant, is red, and the other one emits more of a blue light. And then
so it's
on
a
infrared,
new one.
It's a newer one. It would be newer, yeah. And so in any event, that's what's going on there. And I just thought this was interesting. We have a lot of you that are interested in space. The three of us are too. So sometimes it's kind of fun to see, you know, substantial things for when our new technology really is allowing us to discover things a lot faster than we ever would have been able to in the past.
This forgotten Star Wars series is returning to shelves in 2026.
Yeah. So Gretchen, I'm going to have you weigh in on this, but basically what's going on here is this is a hardcover reprint of a comic strip, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah. And the thing is I think I actually recall seeing it. It was printed in the newspapers. Am I correct?
Yeah, I remember that. It was in the newspapers.
Yeah. And, but I mean, I was still, you know, pretty young at that time, and I didn't like collect, you don't collect the newspaper, at least I didn't. But I do recall seeing it, and I'm like, oh, hey.
So this is going to be out, and it's going to be available as one volume. I believe it's the first time it's being published all together. It's 1,096 pages, so that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I believe it's being published by Dark Horse here in Portland.
Really?
So that's cool. Yeah. And just a footnote on all of this, hats off to George Lucas. This is the 50th. We're getting to the 50th anniversary of Star Wars.
Oh,
believe it or not. So
yeah, you're right. 76. Yeah. Okay.
2026. So yeah, it'll be this year. And I think that's really cool. And it's kept its relevance and everything. And it's interesting to look at it that way. Lucas had a way of being able to create stuff because obviously technology has changed considerably since the 70s. You know, we talk about that all the time. But the way that he did it, from the creative control of it, it was done so that it really didn't age. And when you watch it today, it's like, okay, you know, we probably would have a USB stick instead of a, you know, droid sticking that weird thing in that slot that turns around. But at the end of the day, the concepts still work. It's far, far away, so it's going to be different technology anyway, but mm-hmm. It doesn't feel obsolete, which is something I think is really cool. It's really hard to pull that off. A lot of things age badly, and this hasn't.
All right. So, daylight savings time. Get ready to spring forward even earlier this year. I wish we would just not do this.
Yes, yeah, so an editor's commentary here. Yuck.
Sorry.
I am of the same opinion, and just on the aside on that, there's been a lot of attempts to end the changing of the clocks. The Sunshine Act, which was in Congress and I believe has been reintroduced, would make daylight savings permanent. There is another school of thought that would like to make standard time permanent.
I think it should be standard.
But yeah, I agree with the standard time thing, but I would support the other one if that's the way it had to be. I really just, this changing of the clocks every year, twice a year, is a real hassle, and it actually has been found to cause more traffic accidents and things like that because it puts people out of their normal rhythms. And in the fall, it's nice because you get an extra hour of sleep, but in the spring, it isn't so nice because you lose it, you know?
I don't like it either way. I think they should just leave it in standard time. We're not living in an age where we have candles, okay? We have electricity now.
I have candles in my drawer.
We have electricity now. We can,
oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. There is that. But
So if we need to go outside and see what's going on with the cows, we can turn the lights on or a flashlight. Okay.
Yeah. I just, you know, and the thing of it is that's another argument is, you know, is daylight saving still relevant? Most majority of people would say it's not. Some say it is. It would be interesting because I know up here in the Pacific Northwest, it would mean that sun up in the morning would be what, like during the dark times, 9:30. AM something, and then you would have sun really early in the summer anyway, depending on which way you shift, whether which one becomes permanent. So anyway, so but back to the topic at hand here, we are springing forward one day earlier than last year, so it isn't that bad.
Oh,
but it is going to be just the way the calendar works out. It's the earliest possible date that they can do it, which means if we're still switching next year, it'll be a little bit later.
Scientists can't believe 8 new spacecraft images unmask interstellar comet 3I Atlas in such unsettling detail it doesn't look natural.
All right, so this is a story that I wanted to cover for not the reasons you might think that we would cover a news story.
Oh.
And the reason for this is we get a lot of questions in on how do you figure out what you can believe?
Oh.
Especially when things like science and that kind of thing come out. This is published by an outlet called The Pulse. I'm not particularly familiar with them.
Yeah.
But it is one that when I looked at this, I first said, oh, you know, this isn't terribly accurate. So we're going to take it out of the lineup. Some parts are. I think what this would qualify as something that's sensationalized would mm-hmm. be the best way to put it. There okay. are aspects of the article that are absolutely true and that type of a thing. And then there's other stuff in there that isn't quite the same. So just to kind of go over this real quick, we've talked about this in the past. 3i Atlas is real and has been observed by many spacecraft. And there are images that do exist, but not high definition movie-like pictures, which the article seems to allude to.
Oh, really?
And the way I figured that one out is I tried looking for the pictures. Oh, this would be cool. And I couldn't find them. And there's none in the article either, right? So,
yeah,
you know.
I thought that was annoying. But I see these articles constantly. So I don't know which one is good and which one is bad. And so,
yeah, and it makes it hard because stuff that's presented, and I wouldn't go as far as to say this article is false. It has accurate information in it, but the way it's presented is it's not accurate as a whole, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is the scientific community do not think that 3i Atlas looks unnatural, which is alluded to in the article. It is a comet. It has some unique characteristics, according to the mainstream scientific community. But they say that there is no artificial or unsettling link that would apply non-natural origins. So is it an alien spaceship and the aliens are going to come down? Well, that would have already happened in December. So we're, you know, outside of it being maybe like super smart AI or something, it's not going to be the case. But at the end of the day, again, the article would tend to allude to different things. And we're picking on this one because it's the one I saw, but I'm seeing this, like you say, Gretchen, all over the place.
Yeah.
There are videos on YouTube that go into, you know, well, it's been proven that, you know, this, that, and the other thing happened when in fact you research and it hasn't. And NASA and independent studies confirm the object is a natural object. Again, the scientific community reports this. Searches for artificial signals or techno signatures have not been found and alluded to at that. So, wrapping that up, sensational claims online remain unverified. The article talks about rotating weird shape, but they're not induced by scientific agencies and lack verification. So I think where we're going with this is it's important that you don't just believe everything you read online.
That makes sense.
You know, and most of us get our news through the internet now as opposed to conventional news sources. But the thing of it is, as we all know, anybody can write on the internet. You can have a blog, put up a website, all these different type of things. Does not mean it's accurate, does not mean it's inaccurate, but it does require doing some independent research, going to organizations like NASA or the ESA, and seeing what they're talking about, and maybe even reaching out and asking questions. There's ways to do that too if you have them. But again, at the end of the day, I just wanted to throw this in here to talk about how these things can fool you. And it's very easy to do.
Boston Dynamics Atlas robot at CES 2026. I saw this video and I was hoping what I was seeing was real. So I'm assuming that you've done your CES research, and it was a really cool looking robot. And I hope this guy's real. Is he?
Yeah. From what I've been able to find, the videos that are being showed are real. And it even looks like the robot's operating on its own, not having someone in the corner, you know, doing it by remote like some other humanoid
robot. Like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, exactly. Don't look behind the curtain.
Ignore the man behind the curtain.
And the other thing of it is Boston Dynamics is a credible company. They've spot the dog, which a lot of us have seen videos online and that type of a thing. So at the end of the day, I do think that this is fairly accurate. And I do think the videos they're showing are accurate. I mean, if it comes out, it's not, we'll talk about that. But, you know, really, it seems like they've kind of gotten there. And if they have, they've got articulation of the three fingers and other things that have been something that has been somewhat difficult to come up with. And speaking of CES, I promised that in the opening. So let's go ahead and jump into that a little bit here. The show is happening this week. It closes, we're recording on the 7th. It closes on the 9th. So you'll be hearing the show on the 10th. So it'll be one day ago that it shut down. And AI is kind of in everything. We are seeing this next-gen display, smart home upgrades, robotics, wearable tech, AI-powered devices across every category, and from PCs to fridges to everything else. So, needless to say, they're talking about AI a lot.
Hey, you know, Spock used AI on Star Trek to research an actor who was thought to be a mass murderer. And I just watched this and I'm thinking, hey, I use AI to research stuff. So, and so does Spock. And that was in the 60s. So,
yeah. So And it is true. I mean, you know, an artificial intelligence as an idea is not new. I mean, they talked about it in the 80s. It's been something that's been out there. Now, generative AI and some of the direction we're able to go with it now, that is unique and something that is definitely getting involved in everything, good, bad, or otherwise. We're seeing it all over the place. And along that line, there are some interesting pieces of technology they showed. Now, Samsung unveiled, every year they seem to go to CES with the biggest TV. This year it was 130-inch. micro RGB AI TV.
okay.
With built-in conversational AI, so you can talk to your television. How nice, right?
Okay, I'm thinking of a Fahrenheit 451 and Weird Al's song. That's what's going through my head.
LG is showing a new OLED lineup, which are paper thin. They're calling them wallpaper OLEDs, and again, AI-powered picture adjustments. So if you need a new television, there's going to be some cool stuff out there. I don't know how you'd fit a 130-inch television through your door, but I'm sure there's a way. So the other thing that's interesting is phones, wearable tech. This is an area that usually is covered at CES, but Motorola is distributing or actually showing off a book-style foldable phone. So it folds up even more than the ones we have now, which are kind of cool. I like the form factor. I have one that's a flip, Samsung flip that folds in half.
Yeah.
And I know they have a fold that's two screens that go together, but it's smaller and it's nice size. So they're, you know, building up on that, which actually makes a lot of sense. They would. You look at the different things, wearables are becoming a big deal. HUD glasses and that type of thing are starting to be available to regular consumers, although they still have their bugs to get worked out, but they're there. And when you look at these things, it's kind of fun to see what direction this will all go. I think one of my favorite things was a concept laptop where the screen unrolls. So when you turn it on, you can pull it out the side and you have the, like this thing for an immersive display that you can roll around you. And it did seem to work as long as it was really what it was being shown.
Yeah.
It was really, you know, something that's different. Now, smart home and robotics is another area that's been a big deal. But one of the most unique one was a robot by Roborock, a company called Roborock. And it's a stair-climbing RoboVac.
Ah.
So one of the limitations about robot vacuums and a lot of other robots is they don't do the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be on one floor. So now this can climb up the stairs. That sounds really like that wouldn't be scary in the middle of the night if you forgot to turn it off. And
maybe close so you see it.
You know, so yeah, it just... Now, AI laundry care, that's interesting. We're looking at what that's going to be. And not that our washers and dryers aren't complicated enough, but it's going to get even more complicated. Another one that's interesting is air conditioners that intelligently adapt to the room they're in. And I can see where this would be kind of cool because it could save electricity and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of cool to see where all of this is going. And we'll see what else gets debuted here. IKEA was even involved, and they have a set of Bluetooth speakers that compare in large groups. So instead of just your one smart speaker, which one of the things I like is stereo and surround sound, and that is something you do lose with a smart speaker, although the some of them have been set up where you can pair two together and put it in place, but that's not done by a lot of people. Well, this kind of a situation actually allows for pairing your smart speakers for Atmos if you wanted it. Or at least 7-channel surround sound, you know. So that being the case, a lot to see. All right, we're going to go ahead and break and go to our next segment, and we'll be right back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Before we get into our next segment, where we're going to be talking about what is happening with our Arcade 1-Up, a question that's been coming in from everybody, I just want to remind you to continue sending in your information at userfriendly.show. Questions, comments, anything like that. We've been getting some great feedback back over the last year, and this is how we do our programming, because we want to be able to produce what you want to hear. So again, userfriendly.show, click on the Ask a Question button, and that's where you can submit anything that you would like to do. All right. With that, I'm going to welcome the host of The Vault, James Sherwood. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. But this time we have a topic that is kind of created some churn and questions and that type of a thing. And that's what's happening with the Arcade 1-Up. And before we get into that, just really quick for anybody that doesn't know, Arcade 1-Up is a company that manufactures reproductions of stand-up arcade games. They're three-quarter size of the original. They've been doing this for a number of years. You could buy these at Walmart and other places like that. One that we have among us is Golden Axe, the old Sega game Golden Axe. So that's one, but they've done Pac-Man and a number of other things. So a lot of people know about them, and there's definitely from some of the comments we've been getting a love-hate relationship, but there have been some developments here. So James, go ahead and just take the ball on this. What's happening?
So on December 12th of last year, 2025, there was a screenshot of an internal email released from Arcade 1-Up. And that email was indicating that most of their operation was shutting down the following Friday and pretty much said, you know, this will be your last day. We're changing things over. There has not been too much of an official response from Arcade 1-Up. There's been a little bit of stuff on the side. One of the primary ones is a lot of their titles and property are going to be absorbed by the company Basic Fun. And okay. Basic Fun does games and claw machines. They have a whole line of handheld arcade games, which is kind of fun. And by handheld arcade games, I mean it's literally like the size of one of the old Game Boys, but it's classic arcade titles with a little joystick and a couple of little buttons. But yeah, it looks like Arcade 1-Up is going away. I did a fair bit of digging. And one of the things I was able to find, one of the concerns that was out there was what happens to the game software, what happens to the online connectivity and updates and things.
So this is like if you have one of their cabinets or some of their other products, because they had some other cool stuff like the Infinity Table and things. I guess what you're saying is this going to still work? Because if that's the question, this is something that we've had a lot of requests to find out.
So they have released that some of the arcade cabinets are still going to maintain some connectivity. Can't remember exactly. There were four of them that were listed on the website. Well, Marvel vs. Capcom, I believe, was one of them. Okay. Mortal Kombat was one of them. There will still be some online connectivity, but what it's going to do is remember the last 100 IP addresses that you played against. Okay. And when you want to play online, it pings those 100 and sees if anyone is online.
Okay.
So rather than being an open server and having full connectivity, it's going to be a greatly truncated amount.
So does that mean that if a new person couldn't, I'm trying to understand how that would work. So right now, if you wanted to go online with this system or before this change, I don't know if it's in there yet, you would be able to see if there's others online. So what you're saying is they're restricting it to the last 100. So a new person couldn't join your group, in other words.
That part hasn't been released.
Okay. Okay.
It's kind of this nebulous gray area. I was able to find two reports on it that they had come out with. I cannot find super official releases from Arcade 1-Up or from Basic Fun. It's all been kind of around the edges. That was one that they were talking about. They would still have some connectivity, but nothing super in-depth with it. One of the other interesting parts is there has been no conversation about the Infinity Tables.
Okay.
I cannot find anything on whether or not those are going to continue to function, and they have a lot of online features. So we just don't know with that.
Okay. If you could give us a quick 411 on what the Infinity Tables are. We've discussed this a few times, but I don't think everybody's heard of these.
So the Infinity Table is a really neat idea. It is... There are two versions of it. One is the tabletop and one is an actual table. The table is a 32-inch touchscreen board game table. You can play chess. You can play Sorry. You can play Candyland. They have a collection of, I believe it was 170 games or more that you could get on and play right there on a table with touchscreen. some of them. There was wizard chess from Harry Potter was one of them that was on the list. But it allowed for everybody to get together for a game night and play.
And this would not be just in your house, but be remotely, I would assume.
That is my understanding, is that there is a remote feature. I have never played on one myself. I desperately wanted one, but the price point was not cheap. The tables went for around $1,000. But if you're somebody who hosts a lot, if you're somebody that really enjoys their board games, has a lot of friends, or has a lot of family that you want to do game nights, it would be fantastic. Right up until the company announces that they're going to shut down, and all of a sudden we don't know what's going to happen with it.
And you know, an interesting thing, as of the time we're recording, so this may have changed when this airs and when you hear it, but as of the time of our recording, the Arcade One website is still there. You can go online and you can still buy product. Mm-hmm. And some of their vendors, I went to Home Depot for whatever reason, they carry this, and so does Best Buy. I didn't order anything, but it seemed like you could still add it to the cart and, you know, do the normal bit. Which is interesting, because you could right now, if you didn't know about all this, drop $1,000 on something that, in my opinion, sounds like a very cool device, and then find out when you get it, it doesn't do anything, or I don't know what that would mean. And, you know, let's talk about that a little bit, because when you have a company that uses online access, and Arcade 1UP being what we're talking about here, but this is not, it's hardly just Arcade 1UP that sells products that have online components. I mean, pretty much everybody does now that, you know, comes into a realm of these things. And it's a situation where this can affect, you know, a lot of different things. And one of the concerns that a lot of people have about this, if you buy into a new technology and then that company goes away, it can brick your device. Now, something like the table, I would assume you're loading stuff online, or at least, you know, it probably comes with some stuff pre-installed. But the point of it is losing that much of the functionality with no, you know, you didn't know that was going to happen. Well, sorry, you know, kind of thing. Well, I don't know. I could see where this could be very frustrating and very concerning to a lot of people. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
So it's a gamble, and it's one of the concerns I've had with a lot of modern gaming. You look at your platforms like PlayStation and Xbox and some of these other huge names, and it's gone so far away from physical media. And what do you do when it shuts down?
Right.
You have hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in these things that all of a sudden you have no access to. Even if it's just part of the functionality, one that comes to my brain, there was a game on Xbox called Gears of War.
I remember that.
Yeah. Amazingly fun game. And one of the really cool parts was it had some really fun multiplayer online matchmaking and co-op. And they had PvP arenas and all sorts of stuff. And then one night it went away. You could still play the game. You could still do the single player. You could still do the single player campaign. But all of a sudden you couldn't even do co-op play online because the servers went away. So you have that as a real risk anytime you are relying completely on internet or online connection.
You know, it is interesting to see where these companies can reach, you know, into your stuff. I know one thing that has come up in the past on user-friendly and is a concern. I don't know if Microsoft does this, but Sony does, where they will ban your device if you violate rules or something forever from their network. And one of my issues, and one of the reasons I don't have a PlayStation 5 or the new Xbox, is because I'm kind of tired of the subscriptions. And at least on my PlayStation 4, if you had PlayStation Network, that was great and it had those features. But if you didn't, the system would still work. It seems like the newer generation of the stuff, I'm sure it turns on, but I'm sure there's a game or two you can even get for. Well, I don't know if it's the digital one, if it would even work at all without the network. You would know more about this than I would.
So I can speak mostly to Xbox. That's my jam. One of the things with Xbox is you have to buy an online membership to have access to online multiplayer.
Okay.
They range anywhere from $10 to $30. You can buy the very basic one, which you don't get a lot of the other perks, but at least you have that online ability, all the way up to the top tier one, which I believe is called Ultimate, where you get free games and Game Pass and all these other things. So the memberships, rather than what they used to be with the Xbox Live, do have value. You can play day one releases for free. They also allow access to those servers so you can do the online multiplay. But that also means that you're paying, $300 to $600 for the initial unit, and then you're having to pay another, let's say, $100 a year to be able to use it for part of that function.
I mean, so after $20 from what you were saying, because of $10 a month, and the $30 a month, you know, would be what, $360.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it does seem like, now I don't know, the people that know me know some of the games I like. One of them is Cyberpunk, and it's available on the platforms. Now I don't have to pay a monthly fee. It works off of my PC. I don't have that restriction.
Yep.
So, you know, so if I was to do this on a console, it seems like I would have less control of the game because of the controller configuration, and then I'd have to pay for the privilege of using the game that I bought. I can see why people have a problem with that.
It is. And PlayStation, I believe it was PlayStation 3, even started where if you buy physical media, it wasn't the game.
Yeah. Yeah. 0-day download.
Yeah. You'd have to put the disc in. The disc was your activation key and would download the game from their network. So getting back to it a little bit, their servers go down, their service goes away, whatever it may be, you're bricked.
Yeah.
Because so many of the games now, even if you buy them, it has to have an online component so that it can ping to make sure that you have a valid license for that game, even if it's physical media.
Yeah, and well, the other part of it too is it sounds like the disc doesn't really contain the game.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, and if you go on download, and you know, there's different parts of it. Again, you know, talking about Cyberpunk, when I bought it, it came in a box. And there was a disc in the box. I'm kind of looking at this going, is this actually on a, you know, DVD or a Blu-ray or something? No, it's a CD with music. And in the box is a card with a link of where you download the game. And now this is like 8 gigabyte or something. So trying to fit that on any kind of physical media would be difficult. You'd probably put it on a flash drive, I would think, if you were going to do that. But that wasn't the case here. And then the other part of it is I noticed with not just that, but with a lot of them, you also have updates. You know, downloadable content that you buy is one thing, but even if you choose not to do that to keep the game functioning, there still seems to be updates. And if you didn't have access to the online thing, no. So let me ask you this: on the PC again, I can download those updates, even if I want to buy DLC, of course, that too. But even the stuff that's just maintenance, if I was on the Xbox and didn't have the network, and presumably the same thing for the PlayStation, could I even download the updates?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
My understanding is as long as you have internet connection, you can download patches, you can do that kind of update. The online connection, the multiplayer, is the primary thing that we have to watch out for. That connectivity is what goes away or what you're paying for the most.
Right.
It gets into kind of this gray area, though, and you'd know better than I would how much data even a Blu-ray can store.
Yeah.
But I just downloaded a game that the base game without patches, without DLC, without anything else was 140 gigabytes.
Yeah, that's not unusual.
So
it really isn't, you know?
Yeah, Cyberpunk, I believe, was around 80 gigabytes.
When it first came out, and then when it actually worked, it was more like 100. But yeah, I guess that missing 20 gigabytes was what caused it. For anybody that doesn't know, when that game came out, it was a disaster for about the first 3 months.
Yes.
And the PC version would actually run. I mean, you know, I was able to get on it and stuff, but you'd go through, do your character creation and stuff. And, you know, it was a roll of the dice whether or not it corrupted it, and you had to do it again and lose all of your things. Now, my understanding is on the consoles, it didn't work at all. You bought it, and you know they actually had a warning. You can buy. I think one of them I know took it down completely, and the other one was like, well, yeah, you can buy this game, but, you know, it's not going to work. Click here to make sure you acknowledge that.
Xbox.
Yeah, yeah.
Xbox had a warning saying this game does not function, but if you buy into it now when it does function, you'll have a great game.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. CD Red did fix it and did a very nice job. And once they got the bugs worked out, it's been a great game and it's been very stable. There hasn't been a problem like that since. But it's very different than the days of, you know, you get your Nintendo cartridge and you put it in. First of all, you'd have to have the game done. I don't even think some of these games are finished when they start being distributed because they don't have to, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of an interesting aspect of modern gaming. So a lot of them now do ground level kind of a beta test. One that comes to mind that people know about is Baldur's Gate 3. I bought into that about 2 years before it was released. So okay. I got to see the entire evolution of this game from the fact that it barely worked when it first came out. It had almost no character classes, all the way up to the finished product, which is now released and is amazingly fun. But I got to see all the steps going through. Ark Survival was another one that did that. You bought in on like a pre-release and you actually got to go in and play the game and see the evolution. Some of that's okay. But if you're selling me a complete game without that aspect, I expect it to be playable. And they've gotten away from that with some of the games. That Cyberpunk is one of the most illustrative examples. Because it literally didn't function, but they released it as a game on physical media, online, and it did take, I believe it was around 2 months, 3 months, to get to the point where it was stable enough to actually play.
You know, so, and again, at the end of the day, they fixed it. I think in the olden days, they might have just waited to make sure the game was done before they released it, but
yeah,
because, you know, it's somewhat more difficult to change the ROM in a cartridge that's already been made.
Yes.
Yeah, it just is. And although modern stuff, I have a console called an Evercade, and it takes cartridges and, you know, works like the old stuff, but it's interesting because it is connected and it can update the cartridges. So just presumably they're flash or something, you know, but even that is kind of bridging, you know, the two different things. But, you know, on a broader scale here, it's just kind of circle back to servers and things. I know that there's been a lot of information that has come out in recent years. I have one of these things, and it's these smart devices, because, you know, we're talking about arcade one-up and cabinets, but the thing of it is that's basically a smart device. And at the end of the day, if that vendor distributor goes away, you've lost access to something that you've paid for. You can't, you know, deal with it. In my case, it was a holiday light thing that you could program and, you know, do all this stuff with it. Now, it's still turned on this year and it still worked the last mode I had it set in, but you can't get in and change anything, you know? So that mm-hmm. part of it's done. And another big one is some of these new digital e-ink picture frames. And it's kind of a cool concept. You have a picture frame on the wall. It uses the same kind of technology that's in an e-reader. So when you've put a picture, photograph, whatever in it, it doesn't use power and it just sits there and you look at it. And then if you want to change it, you can. And when these originally came out, they were, in some cases for the bigger ones, $400 or $500 or more. And the first company, or not first company, but the company that had distributed some of these, there were different vendors and the others are still around, but they ended up in a situation where they went bankrupt about 6 months later. And as long as you're happy with the photograph that's in the frame, and you better be, because that's what's going to be there forever, you can't change it anymore. So you've paid for something. And to me, it's a little bit weird. If I've bought something and I want to be able to use it, but I'm not able to, but I purchased it, you know, how does that work? And that plays back into some of the other things, like the BMW heated seats thing. So you're buying a car and the seats are in the car and the hardware's there, but you have to have a subscription to be able to turn it on. Now, I would have figured out a way to bypass and hotwire them in, but that's me. Probably would void the warranty. But the question becomes from that too, and this is another aspect of these things, is, okay, in that set of circumstances, have I paid for the heated seats and the price of the car? And if I have, why can't I use them? And if I haven't, how does it work? Because let's say I, you know, buy my subscriptions for my heated seats and heated steering wheel. That was the other one. By the way, this had a lot of pushback and they've kind of stopped doing this for the moment, at least. But let's say I have a 2-year warranty on my car. My brand new car has 2 warranties now, or a 2-year warranty. Now, I'm at 2 years and 1 month.
and the heated seats break. Well, whose responsibility? Am I renting them from BMW because I'm paying for them? Are they? I can assure you they're going to say, oh, you have to pay to have that repaired, even though you're renting them. I mean, you know, you have some situations like this, and I can understand why people get frustrated with this stuff.
And you even look at some of the subscription-based services. One that comes to mind is something like a MMORPG. I'm more familiar with the video games than some of the other technology. Sure. You look at some of those. There's one right now, a New World, that has been out for several years. It's an MMORPG. You can buy it on Xbox. You can play it online. It's supposed to have some cross-play features, which is really neat. And then they announced a little while ago that the servers are shutting down this year. But yeah, that's not broadcast widely, so you can still go on Xbox Marketplace and buy this game for $60 or $70. And if you're not paying attention, and I believe it's March or something like that, it goes away. Yeah. So and where's the accountability for that? You know, you charge me money for something that is only online, that is only a subscription. It's free to play once I buy the game, but then you break it 2 or 3 months after I buy it.
Yeah, and right now it's let the buyer beware. I've heard some rumors that the government's getting involved. I'm sure that will fix all this immediately. And wanting to pass some legislation dealing with these things that would affect, you know, how that would be handled. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, it really, what it comes down to is that you're not buying it, you're renting it, mm-hmm. you know? Because if there's no guarantee you continue to use it, it was always you bought a software, you're not buying the intellectual property, you buy a license to use it, but you would be able to use it as long as you want to. If you needed to upgrade, then you would buy a new version. And that model is pretty much gone now. Most software sells with a subscription model. And most of the time, if you stop paying the subscription, you lose access completely. One of the biggest ones with this is the Adobe product suite. Yes. You know, a lot of other ones might leave it where you can still edit and, you know, things like that. But no, your files that you've created will not be accessible if you don't continue to pay the subscription. And there's a lot of people that are not happy with that. I mean, you know, I don't know. Where do you think this is all going? Do you think, I'm sure the subscription model is here to stay at least as long as they can allow it. I don't know.
I think it's going on a trajectory that you need to be very certain that whatever you're buying is stable. If I want to do something online, I'm going to look for Adobe's a good example. If I'm going to have to pay for that subscription, I want to pay for it for somewhere like Adobe, where I know that 5 years down the line, it's still going to exist. Because so many of these, I use a different PDF program than Adobe because I was able to go online and buy a permanent license for that program. But for me, I didn't want that subscription. I wanted to own something that I could utilize as I needed to. That's becoming less and less prevalent. It's kind of the downside of this gift of technology that we've been given, is if there is connectivity like that, there is a way to hold a ransom.
And that's, you know, and I think that's where this is headed. We'll have to see what happens with all that. May I have permission to ask you a question?
Sure.
I understand The Vault is becoming a standalone show pretty soon. Can you tell us about what's happening there?
It appears that people like what they're hearing when I come on the air and talk. So we are looking at turning it into a podcast. We don't know entirely what that's going to look like as of yet, but you'll be able to access past content that I've done on User Friendly. I'll be doing drops a couple of times a month. Put it out on... You'll be able to access it on the vault.show. We'll put it out on some other platforms as well and kind of give people a chance to look into what we're doing.
Be coming back to you both on User Friendly and on the Vault with updates on all of this. Anyway, James, thank you. And until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0, copyright 2013 to 2026 by User Friendly Media Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. The content is the opinion of the show's participants and does not necessarily reflect this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, disclosures, and other correspondence may be viewed and submitted at userfriendly.show.